welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And I'm hoping you're enjoying the deep dive in the Constitution we're going through. And as a matter of fact, it's pretty deep, but it's not as deep as it really can be. And I'm not sure that I'm not sure that you would really want to know. I think everybody wants to know how their car works to some degree, so that when it starts failing and you know it's not supposed to work that way, then you can go and take it to somebody who actually does understand exactly what's going on to fix that. Do you need to know the designs, the engineering designs? Do you need to know the everything that's in play, like just to hold your hood up? Do you have that little, I don't know, I don't know the name nomenclature, but, you know, some hoods in the old days had springs, counter springs, so that when you lifted the hood, it would just stay up on its own. And for some reason, they got away from counter springs. And you know what? I look at cars today that have the counter springs, like in the 60s and 70s and so forth, when they were using that technology. That stuff still works. It still works today. I mean, I don't know anybody. I have yet to meet anyone that has ever replaced the counter springs on the hood so that when you lifted the hood up, it stayed up. And it's the same thing with the gates, or, you know, the hatchbacks, whatever, in the back. You know, the engineering that they used, it actually worked. And then they went with these other things that it's like a hydraulic. I don't know all of the principles, but I probably understand them a little bit more than the average person. But my point is the engineering that they went into. Well, okay, so that thing's going to fail. And over time, when you buy a car of the 80s, 90s, and the more engineering involved, the more opportunities for failing. At least the types of solutions that they implement. I had a friend that was in, you know, engineering, computer engineering and so forth, and he was actually a certified engineer for a big global, you know, highly technical company, actually a leader in innovation in computing, period. And it wasn't IBM. But anyway, this gentleman also worked on BMW. And I'm not here to poke anybody that drives a BMW, but one of the things he said, because he was a certified mechanic on BMW, and he was making really good money, but he realized he could make a lot better money doing this other work for this computer company, going around and fixing like supercomputers type of stuff. And so, you know, there was a lot more money in that. Anyway, we were talking and he said, basically, you know, the engineering that's designed into a BMW is relational. There's a direct relationship to the amount of money it costs to maintain that vehicle. And he said, basically, you look at a 300, a 500, a 700, you just add a zero to the end, and that's how much money you will spend because to maintain that level of engineering that they do on an annual basis, especially when it gets beyond its, you know, years of where it's operating. And that was, I guess, the rule of thumb. Maybe they've gotten better. And as a matter of fact, I think BMW went down this approach that basically covered like bumper to bumper as long as you owned it. And they even provided maintenance and so forth. But the point is that there's no money in giving people a permanent solution. In other words, giving something that's, you know, something that really works, that you never have to replace that, then, you know, I may have satisfied you as a customer with having something that will work the rest of your life. But I've lost you as a customer because you'll never buy, you know, come back and buy one of those ever again. And so it's kind of, you know, it's like that psychiatrist. It's like, you know, there's some professions that, you know, you can easily be, you know, get corrupted based on, you know, the reality of your job. If I actually cure somebody, then their butt isn't going to be in that chair. And how am I going to make money? I need to make money. So it's like dentistry, it's like medicine, it's like psychiatry. But that's just one profession. That's just one market of work. It's applicable in every facet. And so I actually had a great opportunity to talk to Trevor Lawton this past week. And I know he came out with a movie regarding, because he told me, he says, I think it's Enemies Within the Church. I've got to find the movie, and I need to take a look at it. But it's even in that profession. There's no profession under the sun on this earth, whether it's politics, religion, what have you, that it cannot be corrupted by money and being able to pursue more of it. And, you know, we see the insidious side of that. And as a matter of fact, I'll give you a good example, the tobacco companies. You know, the tobacco companies, they had a drug that, you know, they sold, and it was addictive. It was naturally addictive, and so people that smoked and engaged in tobacco became addicted to it. Now, not addicted to where they couldn't stop, but, you know, why? Well, all of a sudden, when they started realizing that this is very, you know, this is not advantageous to survive. In other words, you know, you consume this product enough, it will kill you. Because, you know, the old scientific rule, I say this all the time, it takes time to measure results. I mean, you can't just by smoking the cigarette once determine the results of what you've done. And, you know, you could live the rest of your life and say, that had no impact on my life. Now, I smoked for a year. That had no impact on my life. But you smoke for, you know, your entire life, it has an impact. And I can't say that smoking for 1 year doesn't have an impact. It can. You have no idea how your body may react because your body may be a little bit different. You're talking to somebody that now understands, you know, sensitivities that your body reacts differently than another person to a particular foreign substance being introduced into it. So when they finally got to a point where they were competing with this one little thing that was forced upon them by government, this warning from the Surgeon General that smoking could cause, you know, health problems or whatever. I forget what the warning stated. It could cancer, whatever. Anyway, well, they had to actually, because people were trying to quit. In other words, and this goes down the model. So actually, I had no intention of talking about this, but this kind of brings up a lot of the things I'd already talked about today with Matt. And, you know, one of those things was business and how businesses, you know, will start operating because they expand and they do more and more and more. And once you get to a point where your business is this size, the last thing you want to do is have to shrink, because then you have to let people go. Letting people go creates discontent, and it, you know, creates problems because people take that personally. And then next thing you know, people want to air dirty laundry and so forth. When life is going good and you're growing and hiring, everybody's happy. Even though there are people, like in building the Egyptian pyramids, there are people that get caught in the cracks and they die in the process. That means terrible things may happen in that process of this business growing. But it's not a point, because everybody's looking at the money and everybody, you know, the opportunities, and things are really positive when it's going in a positive direction. And so when all of a sudden some things come back and go, oh, you know what? Wow, we've got some problems. Now you have to downsize. And so tobacco companies got caught. They got caught in actually modifying and making cigarettes even more addictive and, you know, more, let's say, satisfying. If, you know, putting something in your lungs and making you cough for the first time ever, if that's satisfying, it's kind of like, I remember one of the effects of heroin. When I learned about heroin, it's one of the effects of heroin and shooting it up, nine times out of 10, the first time a person shot up heroin is they vomited. They threw up. And I go, well, who would consider that a high? I mean, I don't like throwing up. As a matter of fact, most people I know live their life trying not to do that. Why would you induce that behavior? But anyway, back to cigarettes. They started engineering and designing this as to be a more desirable product so that it got harder and harder for people to get away from. Now, we see this because the tobacco companies have been operating for centuries. What is anything different from all of these other businesses? You know, once you create a business idea that may be, you know, evil, you know, some of these sex industries and so forth and things that cater to that. I mean, that's just outright evil. But they start creating these things and they have the same lure of survival. What do we need to do to absolutely stay alive? This goes all the way back from one extreme of the evil side and the dark side of this, and how that dark side actually influences the same things that influence that dark side in business influences those good sides. Oh, well, I can, you know, and I'll give you a good example, like evangelical ministry or people that make their money, you know, their ministry puts a house over their head. Their ministry is what puts food on their table. This is a change from how Christianity used to be in America. This was what we call the awakening, the Great Awakening of the 1800s, was where there was a shift from everybody being involved in church to professional clergy. And so those people in that industry today have the same struggles that, you know, these other companies. I mean, hey, what do I need to do to get more money in that plate? Folks, this is the insidiousness when we get money involved in all of the things we do. And so, and it's not capitalism is a bad thing. It is recognizing when we have hit a point of fruition, what are we going to do when we realize that, you know, we've maxed out and or there's a contraction? What do we do and how we react? Because 9 times out of 10, too many times people will take the low road in reacting to shifts in their market space. And Christianity has done this, everything out there. So anyway, in talking to Trevor Lawden, I need to take a look at that book, The Enemies Within the Church. But I wanted to kind of expose you to this, you know, it's now or never type of thing. He actually has a book, and I'm going to have him on the show. We will probably get him, interview him in the next week or so. But he has a book out there, and it's a senator series. It's basically pointing out the corruption within the Senate and how the senators are basically being bought and sold. And so we have an article on our constitutional articles page. It's called Rescinding the 17th Amendment. And so what I'm going to do, and I told him this, is I'm going to rewrite that. And I'm offering this to him. But now he hasn't told me he's going to accept or not. But anybody that buys his book, you know, because when I'm going to actually change that article, I'm going to go in and do some academic and I'm going to put the footnotes and everything else. So I'm going to really, you know, change that from an editorial, we can do this, to, you know, precisely, this is irrefutable, we can do this, and this is why. And so what I'm going to do is I'm offering him, if he wants to offer this, because I'll pull it off of the website, or at least not offer this article, this package, the academic article, so that, you know, anybody that buys his book will get this article for free. And I want to do that so that I can help him, because I understand what he's doing. The research that he does and the work that he does, that's his livelihood. And so I think it's okay to be able to, you know, help position somebody so that they can do better. But the reason I want to go down this path is because Trevor, with this book, it dovetails with what we're talking about with rescinding the 17th Amendment. And he completely agrees that we need to unravel the 17th Amendment. And he loves the idea of actually rescinding it, getting states to actually do what Delaware did because of the behesting of Joe the Dolt Biden. You know, when it comes to being able to do really evil things, anybody can do that. Anybody. And as a matter of fact, that just shows how Joe is the ordinary, average guy that has become so contempt and so corrupt that, you know, can you be surprised? Can you be surprised that the guy is so low on the low road? I mean, he's setting the example of how low our politicians can go and proving all of this. But what's really more important is actually creating the dialogue, because let's look at this as a strategy, or actually the real technical term is a stratagem. See, a strategy is this overall, you know, plan of how we're going to attack and so forth. But a stratagem is a kind of like a fooling and or a strategy to get them to go down this one path. What I see is if we actually get the progressives to engage in this movement on that will actually take the Senate, and we will succeed with this, and it will force them to react. Let me repeat this. If we actually start helping everybody understand that the constitutional standing is literally that the states have a right to suffrage. The state legislatures have a constitutional right to suffrage. It's right there in Article 5 of the Constitution. More importantly, that the Senate and its roles and responsibilities are to be accountable to the states. The only thing that changed with the 17th Amendment was the appointment process. It didn't change, and we covered this through the ratification debates. So anybody that's listened to the ratification debate series, when we went and covered this in the states, we actually exposed to you that the Senate is legally obligated to offer their suffrage to the state legislature. Just because the 17th Amendment changed the process, and now because the Senate has turned their backs on the state legislature has every right to basically rescind, not because it's a constitutional right, but they have every right because the federal government, going back to Joe the Dolt Biden, the federal government opened that door when Delaware, because of Joe Biden, said, hey, you guys rejected this amendment in 2013. They were the eighth state that they were one out of the eight states that did not ratify it. They were one of the eight. And Joe Biden basically poked them in the eye and told the federal government, these guys need to rescind this, and they're going to. And when they do, you're going to count it. And so the federal government today counts Delaware as ratifying that amendment. In other words, what I just said is the federal government opened the door for states to change their position. See, they tried to do this with the 14th Amendment. And, you know, here's the interesting thing. And I don't know, maybe it's just my analysis. I'm always thinking and connecting dots and so forth. But it was really clear that with the 14th Amendment, there were three or four states that tried to rescind their position or the ratification of the 14th Amendment, Oregon being one of them, if I remember correctly. I think Ohio was another. However, the fact remains that the federal government, that language was not in that amendment that you could rescind it. And so the federal government didn't allow that. In other words, once you rung that bell, it was done. You know, once you did that, once you walked through that door, you're now in that door. Well, that was the same thing with the 17th Amendment. Once you made that decision, you couldn't undo it. But when the federal government actually, for the first time ever, folks, opened the door to actually undo an amendment, folks, that door swings both ways. And most people saying, oh, well, you can only do that if you want to approve the amendment. No. Justice swings both ways. And I had this conversation with John R. Vile, Dr. Vile, out of Middle Tennessee University, MTSU, Middle Tennessee State University, I think it is. And so he's been on my show. And I know he supports the convention of states because, you know, for political purposes. But he did, when I talked to him about rescinding the 17th Amendment, he goes, you know, you've made a great point. And it goes down this way. Because when we look at the court system, doesn't have, it's, this is not justiciable. You know, when states start undoing that. So bottom line, every state that has ratified this is, in other words, they've given their consent, right? They've given their consent to basically, you know, the state legislature is no longer appointing their legislature. But it doesn't mean that they've given their consent to lose their suffrage. In other words, folks, when you look at the 17th Amendment, this is the real deep dive. And if you know anybody in radio, you're going to want to say, you need to listen to the first half of GR's show today. When you look at the 17th Amendment, the language of the 17th Amendment, it only changed how the senators were to be chosen or appointed. It didn't change their role and responsibility to provide suffrage to that state legislature. Now, when we read the equal suffrage of the state in Article 5, it was very clear that that suffrage was not to the people of the state. That suffrage was for the state legislature. And again, just because they changed the process of who was going to appoint them did not change the responsibility of that job. It only changed how that person was hired. In other words, they didn't go through and change the rest of Article 5. They didn't change the rest of Article 1 to basically say the Senate now is a body for and representing the people and doing the people's bidding. It just changed the process of how they were chosen and how they had this honor of becoming a senator to represent the state legislature. That was very clear, and it's clear in the ratification debates that the state legislature is that body that is being represented in the Senate. We went through this in detail. So if the state legislature actually feels like the senators are actually serving others than themselves, then they can come back and say, we are now rejecting the 17th Amendment. And then, as soon as they reject it, they can pull the Article 5, the Article 5 Protection Clause, which basically, the Amendment Protection Clause, that basically says no state shall lose its suffrage and go back to appointing, because then they will actually have somebody accountable to them. Even though the 17th Amendment just changed the appointment, if they're not appointing it and they're not getting the representation, then they have to undo the 17th Amendment to guarantee that. Because if they haven't given up their consent and the federal government's allowed them to make these changes, then they'll go back to appointing it so that they can actually hold these guys accountable. Because it comes down to that right there, accountability. Why is it that we have the right of petition to petition our government for the redress of grievances so we can hold them accountable? Well, the state legislature, they should have the ability to petition their representatives, which is the Senate, and holding them accountable. And if the Senate turns their back and says, I don't have to listen to you anymore, you have no teeth, you can't remove me, then we will undo, because the federal government in 2010 opened that door. Folks, you need to get your states to start rescinding their ratification, and we need to get, and this is the whole point with Trevor Lawton, we need to get every one of those seven states, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Utah. Utah actually rejected the other six states, just never took a position. But if you never gave your consent, then you don't have to surrender the appointment process, because the Fifth Amendment, or the Fifth Article of the Constitution, protects your state from having to surrender your appointment process. And you can actually stand up and say, look, these guys under the 17th Amendment aren't representing us, so we're going back, and, you know, because we never gave consent, we're going back to appointing, period, so that we have accountability and we have our suffrage in the Senate, because we no longer have our suffrage, which is guaranteed by Article 5.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so I think I squeezed it all in there. Going into break. So moving on, and if I've got anything languishing, but bottom line, folks, that state legislature, based on Article 5 of the U.S. or the Constitution for the United States, Article 5 guarantees their suffrage in the Senate. And so if they're not getting it, then they can actually, because that door has been opened, and those seven states, they're not accountable to following the 17th Amendment. The 17th Amendment did not address Article 5. It creates a direct violation of Article 5. In other words, the amendment only changed the process. And if a state, you know, that didn't do that, but the amendment is basically perverting their suffrage, then they don't have to abide by it. And as this argument begins to grow, every state in the union, Oklahoma, Wyoming, all of these states, the state legislatures, I should say, that actually want to have their representation back so that they can start influencing that body that they have a constitutional right to influence. In other words, that body, that Senate, is obligated to represent them. And if they're not, then they have a right to replace them. And the problem with the 17th Amendment is the 17th Amendment didn't give them that. And so it basically creates a direct conflict with their suffrage and holding them accountable. Therefore, they undo the 17th Amendment. Thank you very much, Joe the Dolt Biden. So another thing that I know, and actually I appreciate some feedback, because it's really, it's I don't want to say it's a monster growing legs. It's the truth. And when you let the when all of a sudden you let the truth out and it starts getting the light of day, it starts getting, you know, that if it's a plant, it's the photosynthesis. If it's, you know, a mammal, or, you know, it starts getting that the vitamins and those nutrients that allow us to gain our strength back, right? When all of a sudden the truth comes out and we go, oh, as we starve the truth, we become weaker and weaker as a society. And this goes back to, you know, that old adage that I've said, and I actually, I say it every once in a while, maybe twice or three times on the show, but I need to say it a little bit more often, because when you really look at what I would say, you know, because this goes to the feeling or the suffering of pain. You know, we're all going to experience pain, but we have to make a choice, every single one of us. And collectively, we all have to make this pain, or I should say, choose the pain we want. Now, if we take the pain of discipline, then we won't suffer the pain of regret. But if we do not choose this pain of discipline, we will. We as a society, we as an individual, will suffer the pain of regret. So make your choice. Make your choice, folks. Start making your choice when it comes to societal choices. We either start talking and really bringing discipline into the conversation. Well, hold on. This is not a disciplined approach. As I look, and I'll give you great context to this, because again, this kind of goes back to a conversation with Matt today. When we look at homelessness, and when we look at the drug problems, just the drug problems, not pornography, not gambling, and all the, you know, and drugs and all these other, well, drugs, but I mean, all of these addictive behaviors, when we look at those problems and we don't bring discipline into the conversation, then we will suffer the pain of regret. And as a society, because we're not teaching discipline in our education system, we are suffering the pain of regret as a society. Whether that be the sexual morality, whether that be the gambling, that morality. Because when we talk about morality, morality is this huge umbrella, folks. Morality means that you do what's best for you and what's best for society. That's what discipline also drives. And discipline helps, you know, it's our moral compass as well to, you know, constrain our desires. You know, I could go down all these different paths of carnal pursuits that are very destructive, even down the path of eating, drinking, drugs. It doesn't matter. Excessive behavior is destructive behavior. And or engaging in those things, or engaging in those things with reckless abandon, surrendering your will to them, because that's when you cross that line of addiction. Isn't it better as a society that we just don't even cross that line of saying, you know, there is a point where, you know, we have the ability to capture the data, the empirical data and so forth. See, when we read the Bible, you know, they may have had drug problems in the past, you know, and it may have been kind of handled or spoken of, because you don't know, where they didn't get into the details of the scourge that was, you know, plaguing Sodom and Gomorrah. It was just the sexual side. But I'm just saying, if a society was down that path of, you know, being so immoral. I mean, it was a society of moral turpitude, the abandonment of morality, period. Then I'm going to say that you probably in Sodom and Gomorrah probably had drugs, alcohol, and all sorts of things that debase people. I mean, everybody's kind of seen those memes that alcohol has been, you know, the number one, and forgive me for saying this, folks, but we've probably seen this because there was a billboard in LA that said this. That, you know, this, and actually I think it was a brand name that actually said this, that, you know, such and such whiskey has been the, you know, the number one panty remover in the past 100 years. Because what it does is it lowers our resistance to temptation. And they know that. And so people, you know, it's a smug society that actually starts saying things like that, and everybody, you know, kind of laughs because it's true, but that's not funny. So going back to, you know, how long mankind has been plagued with these same problems, it's the same problems. They may not have captured it. It's a morality problem, and morality is just not sex. Morality is, you know, surrendering yourself to where you are no longer the master of your domain when it comes to your finances, when it comes to, you know, like gambling, or when it comes to your body with drugs or what have you. I mean, there's a huge umbrella when it comes to your body and seeking pleasure, or seeking the risk, you know, and the pleasure you get from the risk of, you know, putting something on the line and winning. Dopamines, those types of things. And today we're far smarter at this. We have the ability to create an educational system that can actually document, that could actually have a very powerful effect in keeping kids from engaging in this immoral behavior. But of course, we don't want to do that, or I should say, those who are in charge of our government don't want to do that because they're seeking to destroy us. They want us to be rolled over, you know, and be destroyed by ourselves, because the only way you can really effectively take down such a great society as America is to get them to destroy themselves. I mean, I'm not even the first one that said this. I mean, we've heard this time and time again. So this is not GR's brilliance. I'm only articulating and connecting the dots to help you see, wow, we have to start bringing discipline into the dialogue. And what are our constitutions? Our constitutions is the epitome of our discipline as a governing society. In other words, as we look at public service, I created a pledge for a, and I forget the name of the group in Virginia, but it's the Virginia Pledge of a Public Servant. This pledge needs to be in every state. This pledge needs to be in the hands of every politician. If this politician wants your vote and you demand that they sign this pledge, then now you actually have a politician who is going to properly serve you, because they're not going to serve you. They're going to serve the Constitution. See, folks, when we get our politicians in compliance with the Constitution and they're serving the Constitution, then they're not going to be serving our whims and desires of feeding them, giving them this and giving them that. They're only going to do what they have the authority that we gave them originally. You only have these authorities. And the reason we're in this mess is because more and more people have gotten, you know, into the face of government saying, well, if you're giving us this, then give us that. When is it that we're going to have pet insurance for our pets? When is it that the government's going to start giving us dental insurance? When is it that they're going to start making sure that we have, you know, a coupon to go to a restaurant of our choice every night? Literally, it is that ridiculous. We have created and instituted a government based on the rule of law and have delegated them very specific powers. And when we ask them to bring us jobs, and they give us jobs by bringing in contracts and work, then what they've done is they have subjugated us. Instead of actually teaching us to fish, they've given us a fish. Bottom line, when we look at government giving us jobs, that means that they're keeping other jobs from being able to be worked, being done. If you have a public servant that is supporting and serving the Constitution, they don't bring you jobs. They get the heel of government off of your neck so you can do whatever job you want to do. I'll give you a case in point. Every state of this union has forests, and every state of this union has minerals. Every state of this union, you know, has some types of resources that government is constraining. And they're telling you, you can't harvest those trees. You can't harvest those minerals. Well, hold on here. They don't have any authority to do that. If we get government to support the Constitution and we hold them to the powers that they have, then you now have and can unleash your ability to start mining. You can unleash the ability for you to actually start, you know, harvesting trees and so forth. Now, this begs the question. It goes back to a conversation I had with Cynthia. We need to really have a very open and honest discussion as to, do we really want people to own these resources? In other words, when we look at the gold and the silver in the mines in the West, you know, that have been capped because of Clinton and because of others who knew that right there would open the wealth of America. Because the more gold that America has in circulation, the richer America becomes. Because we have more gold than the rest of the world. And we could be in that position. We have more silver than the rest of the world. And we could be in that position. And they, the globalists, know this. They have to destroy our country to actually open up these riches so that they can claim them for themselves instead of actually claiming them for what we would call the United States and every state in this union. Because now we start seeing God's plan in governing because when we start bringing every state into the union, that means the riches of the United States is the riches of the world. And when we actually all live within the constraints and the confinement of our Constitution and living within the hybrid constitutional republic that our framers have created, then every life, every person that lives within this union will be able to enjoy the liberties that are offered and be able to make the choices of themselves of what they want to do and what they're going to do. So as we get government, and when I say the federal government, off of our necks and start freeing ourselves, now the states can actually do things and allow employment opportunities. But whenever government steps in and says, we're not going to allow you to do that, we're, you know, this goes to a conversation I had with Dan this week. So there is a judge ruling, because this is all about opportunities, right? This is all about being constrained by government. So there's a ruling in Montana, and I don't know the details. I really need to pull it up because I've got it. I just don't have it in front of me. And I think this was an environmentalist group. This was a bunch of teenagers, high school kids and college kids probably, that basically claimed that they had a right to a clean environment and that that this is a constitutional right. And a judge basically said, these kids have this right. And so bottom line, I'm sorry about that. I need to go into the mixer so I can actually turn that off so we don't hear that. But anyway, these kids were given this win by this judge that, you know, we all have a right to a clean environment, that these mines or these trees or I forget what industry it is that they were complaining about. But this is the hypocrisy, and this is what I told Dan, and this is what I said, here's your campaign against that. This is how you call these kids out, and this is how you wake these kids up, because nobody, you want a clean environment, then let's actually broker a petition that stops the heavy metal spraying over our heads. I mean, you're complaining about, you know, the digging up, a little dirt or dust that's getting up, or, you know, some dirt that's getting into the water. That all will heal itself. This heavy metal is getting into our water sources. This heavy metal is affecting our lives and actually having adverse effects on us. This chemtrail this is where you actually turn the tables on the progressives. Oh, well, we have a right to a clean environment. Yeah, well, before we even do that, that's a greater threat. So now that you're supporting that, judge, then this is what we need to get our government to do first. Let's not worry about this right now. Let's not worry about these little things right now. Let's actually take care of the thing that is affecting every single person, because 9 times out of 10, when they're complaining about a mine, that's only one little spot in the state. But when it comes to chemtrails, that reaches beyond. I mean, the crap that they're spraying over your state goes to other states as well. And this crap that they're spraying in other states is coming to your state. We're being bombarded. Folks, if you've never heard and you don't know what chemtrails are, go Google NASA plus Tar Fox, TARFOX. This goes back to the 90s when they actually started doing research in spraying these compounds into the air and for very specific purposes, because they wanted to map prevailing winds and the effects of how they could possibly deliver these types of materials to the people. We're mapping the prevailing winds and so forth, but they're actually doing this for another reason. And it's very insidious, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to put so much heavy metal particulates in the air to reflect the sun's energy. And we talked about this in an earlier show, that what they're really doing and how this actually, if there's any man-made effects that are changing the climate of the earth, this chemical spraying is doing more than anything else we're doing. Why? Because when we look at how the oceans are getting warmer and shifting and melting the ice, or shifting the ice caps, or shifting the freezing spots because the winds are changing and so forth. This all has an effect. We talk about, you know, the dangers of going to the beach on a cloudy day, because when you're out on the ocean and you're getting the direct sun of the sunlight and you're getting the reflected sunlight off of the water, you're getting duplicate effect. But if you have a water effect above you, like the ocean, or I should say not the ocean, the clouds itself, or that crap that they put in the air, then that actually bounces that same, more of that energy that should have gone back out into space back to you again. So that's why people usually burn more on a foggy day at the beach than they would on a nice, sunny, clear day. And so the spraying of these chemtrails is creating that bounce back effect. And it's actually having that adverse effect. But they know what they're doing, because what this is going to do is it is going to send us down a path of the ability of having food. They're already playing these games already. And they're going to want us to go down the path of eating bugs, which all of this is coming true. They're wanting to shorten our food supply. And bottom line, it's about killing people. We're being led like lemmings being led to the cliff, because one stupid person is running. And I'm telling you, the people that are getting us to run in that direction, they know what they're doing, and they're not going to be the ones jumping off the cliff. They're going to be the ones stopping and watching everybody else go across that cliff. And they're going to be laughing the whole time. And they're laughing at us now, because there's too few people capable of connecting dots. Which goes back to, you know, some of the things that we need to talk about today. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about regarding the state legislature, and back to some feedback I got from Cynthia regarding the national debt and who really owns who possesses the sin. When we look at compliance of the Constitution, there are those people right now in our government that are actually committing sins of commission. In other words, they're deliberately violating their oath of office. Those people that are supporting and bringing these illegals across our border, that is a sin of omission. Those people who are saying, come on, we got to fix this. We got to stop this. Let's create some laws to basically stop the flow. Those people who are not, because that right there is not their job. Everybody else in Congress that says, come on, we need to stop this. There is already a mechanism. It's in the Constitution, and they're obligated to actually support the Constitution and what it says to do. What they should be saying, these people who are actually committing the sin of omission, is they're not saying that we need to deploy the militia and repel this invasion. In other words, they're kind of placating those who are directly violating, and in a way, their sin of commission and their sin of omission is equal to the sin of commission. But by the rules of law, the person that held the gun, is the murderer. The person that drove the car aided and abetted and committed assisted in the crime. Well, we have the exact same scenario regarding the Constitution in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. And guess what, folks? The punishment is different. The person that actually committed the crime actually has the full brunt and the full liability. In other words, those people in Congress who are voting to spend the money, even Ron Paul, even Rand Paul, when they vote for this bill or that bill, and there's these little things, because the only person that is going to be guiltless, the only person that will be free of the sin, is the person that voted against everything. And I don't know of any congressman, any senator that's ever had a consistency of voting against everything, because 9 times out of 10, they can't get reelected. because our paradigm doesn't allow that right now. Because our paradigm right now, we demand that you do these things because we're stupid and we've been educated to think that they can do these things. It's a catch-22. It literally is. And if you've never seen or understand that term catch-22, there's another thing to look up. But when we look at who do we hold accountable, we have to hold both sides accountable, but the accountability is different. The people that are actually Obama, the people that are driving the spending of money and the taking on of debt, those people are committing the sins of commission. Those people who are doing nothing to stopping, you know, the spending, saying you have no authority to do that and just allowing it to occur, that is the sin of omission. So their punishment is to be removed from office and banned for life from ever being in public service because they have failed to support the Constitution. Those people who have committed fraud have not only committed fraud, they violated their oath of office and they committed a crime. So technically, even though if you voted for it, technically you have committed that crime. If you're not actually standing up, because there are some times when you'll see a representative that did not vote or they vote against it. Well, in that case, okay, you lucked out because you voted right, but you're still not doing your job. You're still committing the sin of commission. Even if you didn't vote, you have to, the only people that are innocent were just, let's keep in context of the border. The only person that is innocent in the House of Representatives or in the Senate in Congress is the person that is standing on the floor every day demanding that we deploy the militia and repel this invasion. If they vote for, you know, continuing bills and supporting the displacement of these, what we call invaders, or anything like that, then they are equally committing a sin of commission. But they're committing a sin of omission if they vote against it, but they don't do and actually bring the, in other words, they're not talking about the elephant in the room. They have to demand the rule of law to not be guilty of, at the minimum, being removed and banned. Most people will find have not only been committing the sin of omission, but many of them are committing the sin of commission. And they're all guilty of one sin of commission or another, all of them, because you can't avoid that when you have so much unconstitutional government. When government is doing so much that it has no authority to do, then you can just walk into any room and swing a bat and hit everybody because something, you know, they're doing something, they're supporting something that they have no authority to be supporting. Whether it's the FBI, the Department of Justice, the Department of Interior, I mean, I don't care. The Department of Transportation. How many senators and representatives are what we would call constitutionalists are standing up to saying, we need to shut down the Department of Transportation? This goes back to my, you know, talking about the elephant in the room. How many groups out there, patriotic groups out there, are trying to shut down the Department of Transportation because it's unconstitutional? Not one. Where is that? We are all guilty in one way or the other, or at least almost everybody is. Those who listen to this show and really start understanding this stuff, this is how we actually start shining the light for everybody else to see the magnitude of the problem. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic. And we need your help. God bless.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.